Hello and welcome once again to Nakama Britannica, where in every age, in every place, the podcasts remain the same. In our umpteenth bid to get these out on a more regular basis, we're going to try and move to a more casual setup for podcasts wherein we just come in with a vague agenda and talk about anime-related things for around an hour or so. Although this time we did find out that, surprisingly enough, we did have an agenda, and based on that, we decided to take a dive. A high dive.
Hey!
That would probably work better if there wasn't actually a show called Dive running at the moment, but we'll not bother too much about that.
I completely forgot about that as well, actually, you know that.
Never seen that yet, I'm sure it's fine. For this episode, it's just the two of us, so I am Professor Irony, and I got thrown 70 years into the future with only my cat and a Volkswagen Beetle, and all I got was this lousy t-shirt.
And I'm Kyle, also known as Arbalest, and my scientific ninja team is better than your scientific ninja team.
So, this time, seeing as High Dive have entered the streaming arena of dreams with a few unusual older titles, we thought it would be interesting to focus on them. Specifically, we're going to be covering Legend of the Galactic Heroes. Always remember the. I don't know why. Whenever I talk about Legend of Galactic Heroes, I want to drop the. Don't understand that.
Because it's the way every time I abbreviate it down, it always goes L-O-G-H, so you're like Legend of Galactic Heroes, and you think, is there another word in there?
Yeah, I don't get that. I think it just rolls off the tongue better without the, but who knows.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to focus on Legend of Galactic Heroes, or Yang is my waifu, and we're also going to be looking at some of the more eclectic retro-themed pickups that High Dive have acquired, both Future Police Urashiman and the original Gatchaman. Before we get into that, we've also had news today as we are recording this that Daisuke is dead. Daisuke is dead. Or it will
be dead
now. Yeah, they will be, you know, pining for the fjords in October, apparently. That's just when the service is going
to be
shut down.
I think it's the end of October is due to kind of finally set sail and have a Viking funeral, but we'll see when that happens, I think.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know how to feel about that. I haven't used Daisuke personally for a long time, but I think it's probably a good time now if you want to get anything else off there, or, you know, watch anything on it before they close it down, now is the time to start doing that.
I think so, yeah. I mean, all I ever watched on it was One Punch Man, and I think an episode or two of Iron Blooded Orphans before I realised Crunchyroll had it. So I think it was always a tough one for them to really beat the rest of them when they only had so few shows, and it was being shown elsewhere. I think supposedly the US had a better showing because they had a premium subscription, and there's a lot more behind that, but it's a bit of a shame because I think it was decent for what it was, but we never really got to see much more of it.
They tried their best, I guess, but
they did. Yeah,
I mean, the only other things that I can think of that they have on that, other than One Punch Man, they also had Concrete Revolutio, which is something I started and I never finished. I was meant to go back to that. I remember Eel May was big into that.
Yeah.
They also had that one with the sweet shop that I can't remember the name of. I was trying to think of what that was called, though. It was something that seemed to be massively popular on Pixivy and nowhere else.
Yeah, what was it called? You know what? I'll actually look up this while we've got the moment.
Like, I can picture the main girl in it. She had like an Alice headband and a...
Yeah, it's Degashi Kashi.
That was the one, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I watched the first episode, but again, I think Daisuke had that same issue whereby a lot of the shows they had weren't exclusive, so they weren't really, they didn't have that much of an appeal. I think One Punch Man, Idolmaster, and for a short time Dragon Ball Super were the only ones they really had as exclusive to the UK. Everywhere else, like Crunchyroll has them all now. I guess there was Idolmaster as well, which I forgot they had, that I think they lost after some time too, so I'm not sure.
One complaint that I've seen about it is that it was run in a very formal and corporate way. I don't know that I object to that personally. I mean, you know, when you see the way some of the services like Crunchyroll are marketed when it is trying to be incredibly chummy, sometimes I think that they can take that a little bit too far, but at the same time, I guess maybe Daisuke just did come over as a bit stiff and a bit slightly uncaring. I don't know.
Perhaps, yeah. I never really looked too much into it, so I'm not sure of the nitty-gritty of it. I can't really see enough to really fault them for what they were, more just the fact that they just didn't have anything for us, I think.
I suppose as one door closes, another door opens. A door to the diving board. That's a really awkward metaphor, and
That segue.
But yes, the probably the big attraction, or I say the big attraction, maybe we'll get a little bit more into that with High Dive at the moment, is that they have the first official release, if you like to call it that, for Legend of Galactic Heroes, and this is something that people have been kind of clamoring for years at this point. Probably the biggest title still out there, or certainly one of the biggest titles still out there to never have had an official release in English, and now we have it. I believe you were saying that you've never seen Legend of Galactic Heroes before, Arb, so, I mean, what were you expecting from it just before you came into this one?
To be honest, I wasn't really sure. Obviously, I come out of it quite pleasantly surprised. In fact, I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing. But I wasn't really sure what to make of it. I knew it was a long show, and I was like, if I'm getting into this, it's gonna be a long-term investment. But I wasn't really sure what it was gonna be about, bar a kind of war-based, I guess, space opera. Because everyone's always told me it's one of those shows that really define the whole genre.
Kind
And
of space-based laser delivery system, if you
exactly, yes, it's not actually like that, and it's I think what I enjoy the most about the show so far. I'm sure you've got the very grand scale of battles that's going on all the time, but it's always been more about a war of strategy, a war of tactics, which is far more interesting to me. And I thought it's kind of been that grasp. It's a lot to take in, and I've only been able to get down 8 episodes so far, but there's probably more compact into those 8 episodes than you would get in a 24-episode series sometimes.
I mean, I could definitely get that. I watched a fair chunk of Legend of Galactic Heroes, like, quite a while back when it was still just fan subs because, it was one thing that nobody really thought was ever going to get an official release. I think it's definitely a series that you have to kind of be completely on board with it. It's not something you can kind of go into casually. If you're not down with the grand epic scale of it all, then you might get a little bit lost along the way. It's not something I think that you can watch a lot of in a short space of time, for example.
Not really, no. I mean, I start off with maybe one episode at a time. I'm watching a couple more now, but when you're first put in the first episode of it, I think the first 2 or 3 episodes is going to really tell if you can follow it or not, because you're just thrown straight into the thick of things. You're not given any real moment reprieve, any kind of build up to what things are. That comes later on. You're getting everything about what's happening and what you're going to expect a lot of the time in that first episode, and that really just sets the scene. And if you can't really follow that, or if you just feel it's just too wordy, you're probably not going to enjoy it as much,
Yeah,
I think.
that's very true, actually. I mean, I think it is something you will know if the series is for you or not very quickly. You say the first couple of episodes are quite a good indication of what you're going to get going forward. So if you're not digging it more or less straight away, then it's maybe time to tap out while the getting's good. The one thing I did notice with High Dive's release of the series compared to the old fan subs is that they don't have the little labels for the character names popping up, which surprised me a lot because that was a really
All
handy
right.
thing. Like, and I think that was something from the original Japanese release as well. That wasn't something that the fan subbers added in. It was like whenever a new character was introduced, you would get like a little thing that would come up on the screen that said Commander Billy Joe Bob or whatever. It's a shame that High Dive don't have that because when you've got such a huge cast, I think that was a really helpful thing to help you keep track of it all.
Yeah, I'm understanding who most of the characters are, but it's just that I've not reached that many just yet. However, as things have gone on, you're starting to really feel like, can I really put name to face? Because there's so many characters now getting included. They're building up to the main cast, which is still, I think from episode 8, still isn't fully set in stone yet either. But that would
Yeah,
actually
absolutely.
help. Does that come up in the opening, or is that just during the episode?
That's during the episodes. It's for the first, I think, certainly 2 or 3 episodes or so. You'll keep getting like the same character names will come up as well. So it almost kind of serves to reinforce who's who.
I mean, it would certainly help at least going forward, rather, because when you're looking in the episodes, you're going from one faction to the other, in a space of an episode sometimes, and maybe a couple of episodes here or there. So you are needing to kind of catch up with what one side's doing, and then you'll be thrown into the next one. You'll be like, oh, so who are all these characters again? Was this Oberstein? Was this Yang? You know, it's basically a case of, oh, which is what? I mean, obviously the main two characters you're okay with, but when it starts to
Beyond that,
go a
it
bit
is
down,
difficult to keep track.
yeah. So I think it would certainly help if I had that. I mean, I think I'm starting to know who each are, but it's still taking me a bit longer for some of them.
It does strike me as well that we haven't actually said what the series is about.
We haven't. I'm not. Well, it's not actually that hard to explain, is it? It's, at
It's
least on
just
paper, it's an easy one to say.
it's quite literally a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. There are two huge warring factions, the Galactic Empire, which is effectively 19th century Germany in space, and the Alliance, which is the Democratic, I hesitate to quite say America, but
Yeah, they keep calling themselves Democratic and Republican, so I'm guessing there's some level of America in there.
And again, even just visually, there's a definite difference between the two. The Empire is very formal dress and kind of traditional military uniforms, while as the Alliance is much more casual. They seem to dress much more like contemporary soldiers. And
Yeah, the Alliance feels more like what you expect of most people now, because they dress fairly casually. And then you look to the Empire, and then they're dressing like nobles, like they're essentially part of a different hierarchy. You can tell immediately the system they have in place for their politics and everything else.
It does feel very traditional. I mean, again, you've got like a lot of the characters are supposed to be the representative of noble families of the main two protagonists. They start from fairly humble beginnings, sort of lower down the pecking order, and it's how they sort of rise through the ranks and, in a way, become the representative of each side in this kind of massive ongoing war.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Reinhardt, he's rising up the ranks of nobility as he has successes, whereas Yang's, he's surviving battles and it feels like he's being promoted just because he's living. So there's like two different ways of it. Obviously, it's not just that, there's more to it with Yang as well as he gets recognised, but it starts off very much he's getting put up to the next point because he's surviving on and there's not enough people to kind of carry on with it. And then on Reinhardt's side of things, he's winning battles, or propaganda stating that he's always winning, he's always surviving, so he's getting up in the nobility as well.
That's true, actually. I mean, it does feel very much like Reinhardt is trying to claw his way up the social ladder, whereas Yang almost seems to be kind of getting propelled along through the system in spite of himself. So again, you've got that kind of contrast between the two men.
Yeah, I think there's a good example of that actually when you look at the first episode, he's or a couple of episodes into it. He just seems reluctant to do anything with regards to the war. He'd rather just live peacefully. And so you can tell just by his attitude that he's not really wanting to be there, and this position is not something he wants to be in. He's just doing it because he's been given it, essentially.
Yeah, it's waging the war for peace again, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
One thing that does kind of bring me around to a little bit, well, slightly in a slightly roundabout way. I mean, I guess from the visuals as well, you get a definite sense that this is a very 1980s show. I think it was 1988 that the series started, and it kind of maintains very much the same, because it ran for nearly 10 years, Legend of Galactic Heroes, and it looks very much the same throughout. Everything looks a bit like City Hunter. You've got these very kind of not massively kind of elongated faces, but it's a fairly realistic look, but it's also sort of fairly restrained in the artwork. And I slightly wonder how people coming to the series now would get on with that.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I mean, the one thing I will bring up with the animation, now you mentioned that, was the first couple of episodes, when I was watching it, my girlfriend came over and said, their faces just look like they've got blank expressions on them. They look like they've got nothing to them at all. And it said something to do with the eyes as well. And it's like, when she said that, it just kind of dawned on me, so that's what I was thinking was wrong. And the rest of it, the planets, everything else, is gorgeous to look at on a 1980s kind of series-based thing. The scale of it is tremendous, and you can tell that Projection IG has kind of always had that, but it's a case of, their faces just didn't always seem right. And it's quite telling, because there was an episode, I think it was episode 7, 6 or 7, I was watching it, and for some reason, I don't know, this is maybe just something to do with High Dive's release, but it looks like that one episode looked remastered. Now, I don't know if that was an issue with the original episode itself being damaged or whatever, because the character models' faces looked more akin to what you get in the 90s rather than the 80s. There was that level of quality just increased. There was still a slight blank expression to them, but it wasn't as prevalent as it was to maybe the first episodes. Now, I don't know how the episodes were released, because you said it was about 10 years worth almost.
I'm not entirely sure what the original release schedule for this was like. It does seem to have been released in sort of four main chunks, but it was all released to video. I mean, this is an OVA rather than a TV series.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense then. I didn't actually realize. I always thought it was just a full anime series, but I didn't realize it was an o treated as an OVA. So that's quite different, actually.
And I gather that the original intent was to make this a TV series, but as the novel wasn't considered to be well enough known, it was very lengthy as well, so they couldn't get the go ahead to make it a TV series, although I think later on it was actually shown on TV as well.
Yeah, quite rightly so as well, because I think whilst it's I can if you were to come back to it now, I think you would really need to be in a very particular frame of mind for it. I think it is one of those ones that would really that I think watching it, if you can sit through, I mean, if you can enjoy that kind of thing, if you enjoy very wordy, very full-on series, then you're going to get a lot out of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the sort of thing that will probably have, I think, a limited appeal outside of a very specific kind of set of people. It's I think what you were saying about the facial expressions being kind of stilted is pretty much bang on. I don't know why, I seem to find it particularly noticeable with Reinhardt's second in command, if you like, his best friend Kirschreis. I'm going to pronounce this horribly wrongly, but
You know, I can never remember.
he seems to have this sort of same, I don't know what you would describe as, kind of sort of wistful expression, no matter what the situation is. It's like, I've just had a really nice bowl of soup, wistful expression. Many people have died horribly, wistful expression. When you think about what so many anime series are like now, with the multitude of character expressions, there is a lot of kind of emoting going on through the faces. So to come back to something where, I mean, it is quite a restrained series anyway, but even within that, it does feel a little bit like you're almost approaching Golgo 13 level of, I have one facial expression no
One face
matter what the,
expression.
yeah, no matter what
Yeah.
the situation. I'm massively curious as to how successful the series is going to be for High Dive going forward. It's definitely something with kind of highbrow aspirations. There's a lot of allusion to classical mythology. There's a lot, like in the episode that I keep going on about, where it's ancient Roman space, there is a feeling that they are just reenacting Shakespeare's Julius Caesar.
Near the end of the episode, I thought exactly that, and I thought, I'm just watching the Roman Empire crumble again or
Pretty
something to that
much,
effect, aren't I?
yeah. It's a little bit kind of unsubtle with its allusions there. It's like, well, we're going to make this episode a bit like Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. Maybe people won't get that unless everyone's wearing a toga.
A
There is
bit different.
a certain feeling that they're like so far in the future that it might as well be the past.
Exactly, yeah, there's that kind of vibe that, sure, we've gone so far into the future, we're now riding on T-Rexes, with laser beams. It may as well have just been that, to be honest. If you told me that was actually one of the episodes after this one there, I would have believed you as well. It'd be interesting to see.
You do get these kind of strange little asides going on all the way through the series. I mean, to be honest, in a way, that was actually my favorite thing about it. Like, after a while, I did find myself kind of wearying a little bit of the main storyline. Like, I don't know whether it's maybe the lack of emotion from the characters in a way or what, but I never really bought into Yang and Reinhardt beyond a certain point. Like, I found them fine as protagonists, but there came a point after about the first chunk of the OVA that I was kind of like, how does this go on for another 70 episodes?
I'd be kind of curious with that. The one thing that's still not settled for me just yet is that in the first couple of episodes, you basically saw that they seem to know who each other is and who they're up against. And I'm thinking, Okay, that's cool. But how?
That's an interesting thing, actually, because that was the other thing that surprised me about High Dive's release is that nobody's really sure at the moment whether or not they have the rights to the films for this series. Like although they've started with what is, strictly speaking, episode one of the main series, before they actually started into Legend of Galactic Heroes proper, like chronologically, the first thing to come out was a short film, and I'm going to get this wrong with which one it was. My Conquest is the Sea of Stars was the one that I believe preceded this, and that actually does show you the first time that Yang and Reinhardt meet in combat. So that's why when you start into the main series, they already kind of know.
Right, okay, that would make more sense then. I did, before we kind of started the recording as well, have a look into the list of episodes it was, and then as soon as I looked into that, I kind of immediately was taken aback by just how much there is and how the order is set out, because the main OVA series, as you say, is the main thing, so that's just as continuous and that's the main storyline. But there's so much space before it as well that kind of tells the more nitty-gritty of the storylines and everything else, that there's so much to get involved with.
Yeah, it's quite sprawling in a way. It's
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at, there was one of them just running through it. There was Overture to a New War, which is just a retelling of the first two episodes, and there's Disgrace, and then you got My Conquest of the Sea of Stars, so I'm guessing that's where everything kind of starts on.
And it's a strange thing in a way, because all the other material to do with it, all the films and other sort of spin-off series are all prequels. Like it's I kind of, I've always thought there would be like side stories within the main series, but apparently everything else takes place before this.
Yeah, no, I know, it's kind of amazing. I mean, not trying to overwhelm myself by looking at how much there is, but it's quite a lot. And considering also the fact that it's worth noting that back 2 years ago there was a new anime adaptation announced from IG, which is supposedly meant to start this year. There's nothing come of it just yet, but there is something meant to be coming of that. I don't
Think
know when and where.
there's supposed to be an announcement about the voice cast due in September, although if they're intending to also start the series coming out this year, you would think they might be a little bit further on than that. So I don't know that. I'll be interested to see what happens with that, because maybe making a remake of this might be a means to, I don't know, maybe condense it a bit and make it a bit more accessible for the contemporary viewers. It's interesting that we are getting a remake at this point, because in a way I feel like if they do a remake of it which maybe is a bit more accessible, then this might be like the last chance to get a really big push behind the original series.
Yeah, I mean, if it is going to be this year, I can kind of understand it, because is this year not meant to be the 20th anniversary of when the original series ended? The novels, that is.
I'm not sure about the novels. Certainly, this would be the 20th anniversary of the end of the original OVA series.
Right, or it might even be 30th rather, that would make more sense, but definitely
Possibly.
20th of the original series, because I'm sure the original novels finished in about 87, so it might make sense if they're doing it as like a 20 and 30 year anniversary affair. But
Could well
again, I'd
be.
be very curious to see what they make of it. And
Yeah.
I feel like with the way animation is going at the moment, whilst I'm somewhat excited to see if they do something with that to the same scale as the original and try and recapture that, I'm kind of scared with how things are with CG at the moment, if it would just wouldn't have the same level of impact I had. Maybe that's just my own mindset already set in stone, saying I don't like CG, please don't do it. But there's somewhat of a charm you get for the way it was animated back then. Some of that just may not be captured if they do it now.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's interesting to see how that's going to go down. I suppose we can only wait and see what it's going to be like once they start releasing footage for the new version. But yeah, no, I get what you mean. Let's face it, none of that is going to be done by hand this time around. It's very likely all going to be CGI whenever they're out with the ships.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see, but I know it'll be all just kind of speculation at the moment, I think. But maybe the one thing we will definitely get from it is not so blank expressions from the characters, so
Let's
that
hope
might be
so.
something we'll get. But yeah, funnily enough, now I mention that, I still haven't actually touched on the first novel. I do actually have that to hand, which I've not actually read on yet, because that also finally started getting its English release, I think 2 years ago, and I only just stumbled upon it when I was at the Comic-Con in May. I'm looking forward to getting into that, because I think the first novel covers essentially the first 12 or so episodes of the first season.
It's quite a big
so I'll be curious to see how much it is, because I think it actually, for the size of the novel, I'm surprised it actually does cover that much. It'll be good to read, and it'll be fun to come back to that at some point to see how it compares, I think.
Oh, definitely. I'll be interested to see how this goes down for High Dive in the long run. I mean, like I jokingly said when it started up at first, now we're going to find out what millennials think about Legend of Galactic Heroes, but I've actually not heard or seen anyone other than yourself saying that they were watching this for the first time. I've seen very little mention of it at all, unfortunately.
Yeah, no one that I follow or speak with have really said they've been starting to read into it at all. I mean, my flatmate said he gave it a try once before and got bored after two episodes, which is like, well, you know, kind of fits in with what I said earlier.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, no, that's fair enough, I guess. You'll know quickly if it's for you or not.
Yeah, I see. He may certainly try it again, which it'd be nice to see if he does.
If anyone listening to this has recently watched it for the first time, then by all means, you know, send us a message in the forums or give us a tweet or whatever and let you know what you think about it. I would be very interested to know, and if we get any particularly great reactions to it, then we'll be sure to read them out in a future episode, so long as
well,
I'm not
then
completely obscene.
No, and also we won't be taking like how Yang or Reinhardt is your husband either. We're not really going to take that on this episode. We respect you may have that opinion, but
that's another thing that interests me, you know, when they bring out the artwork for the remake version, are they going to go down that road?
Just so long as it's not turning into something like everyone's just finished watching 3 or something, then they're getting something akin to that in the way the character designs are, and it's, oh, this is clearly I'm on Yang's side of things. No, I want Reinhardt. It's like, oh god, not this again.
So long as they don't like reimagine them all as Moe girls or something.
Oh god. This is where I'm glad it's not Kyoto Animation. I'm sorry, that's a horrible thing to say, but please don't Kyoto Animation, please don't animate this with that style. That'd be great. I know it's edgy, but still.
Yes.
Be fine.
My little sister can't be leading the Galactic Empire. I think we should probably move on before this gets any sillier. I say before this gets any sillier, but Future Police Arashiman is a pretty silly series, let's face it.
Yeah, it's in contrast to what Legend of Galactic Heroes is, you're basically going into a comedy show. I think it was around the same time. I think it was maybe a few years before this came out.
Yeah,
about,
I think
82.
This was the early 1980s, I believe, yeah. We should probably explain that the series involves a regular guy in the early 1980s, Japan, I guess it was, I forgot. While being chased by the police, he finds himself transported through time into the year 2050?
Yeah, it's 2050, yeah.
He ends up cast adrift in this world of flying cars and laser guns and strangely popular with the ladies' traffic wardens. basically, because he has travelled from the past into the future, he then becomes, you know, massively interested to nefarious criminal elements, all of whom are convinced that he has psychic powers because he's travelled through time. Therefore, after this, for reasons, he becomes a futuristic policeman, as you do.
As you do. And it only makes sense that this guy who was being chased by the police to start is now a policeman himself, so...
Yeah, so such a few watches the Watchmen there.
Yeah, I think this is a. I don't really know if there's not too much you can say with Arashiman in comparison, but it's a fun, I would say, a little show. But it's actually, I think, 50 episodes as well, no less.
Yeah, again, surprising that this. Well, I guess it's just the way they made it.
It's just, I think it's maybe just something to do with the 80s and just liking long shows. But yeah, it's another long show, and from the first couple of episodes, you get a kind of good idea of what to expect. It doesn't feel so much Monster of the Week, but it feels like your general good guys versus the crime syndicate. To start off with, you're going to have your kind of atypical kind of, oh, they're trying to get this, so the good guys stop them in this episode and just do the same for the next few episodes before you get onto a more recurring long-term storyline. It's a good bit of fun, to be honest, I think, for the most part. I think that's the best way to really describe it. And it's reinforcing Japan's, or even I think the world's, interest at the time of the future and what it could be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still quite an upbeat vision of the future. I guess you could consider this a kids' TV series because I mean, it does feel a little bit at times there is something of the toy commercial about it. You know, a lot of the vehicles and things do feel a little bit like they would be fairly
They
easy
do.
to make into toy replicas. But, at the same time, it's you know, every once in a while you'll get this sort of weird hint of something a bit darker about it. It's a bit of a strange one. I think particularly just the look of the main villain characters in this, you'd think that by the sort of logic of this kind of series, they ought to have silly costumes and things, but they actually look like they've, you know, tottered out of The Godfather or something like that.
it doesn't also help the fact that the main villain of the series so far that I can tell is called the Führer. So there is
Yes.
that. There is that. I think
Oh,
we should have mentioned that to begin with. The main villain of this is
yes.
called, so far, it's just referred to as the Führer.
It's going to be Hitler's brain in a jar, isn't it?
Oh, I hope to see that because I think that'll be
Yeah.
amazing if it is. But at the moment, all they seem to want is they want. Who's now dubbed Ryu Urashiman, because he's now lost all his memory of his
Yeah,
time in
yeah.
1983, and he's now being deemed Ryu Urashima, or I think it's Ryu Urashima, I think it is, not Urashiman.
Ryo
I'm trying to,
Urashima, something
yeah, I'm trying not to say Urashiman, but I'm just going to keep saying that if I do.
that, yeah. Yeah, it's. The thing that always gets me with this one is that I always end up. It always reminds me of a bit in the well, to paraphrase a scene in The Simpsons to do with discovering a boogeyman. I always just think of Homer saying, "I don't mean to alarm you, Marge, but there may be an Urashiman
Yeah, I think that kind of exactly it,
Urashimen in
honestly.
this house." It's just a kind of enjoyably goofy science fiction action series, really. I think it looks reasonably well for its age, I would say. I don't think we've quite got into the sort of more harder edged 1980s anime look. There's still a bit of the 70s about this one, but it's
There is, yeah.
yeah. The other thing that might interest some people is that this was a role for Akira Kamiya just very shortly before he was cast as Kenshiro in Fist of the North Star.
Oh, right, really?
Yeah,
I didn't even
it's
realize that was him.
Akira Kamiya plays Claude, the traffic warden who is then co-opted into being Ryo's sidekick in this fact, well, sidekick, partner, opposite number.
Partner, arch nemesis,
Yes.
rival, I don't know, whatever he wants to feel
Yeah.
like at the time, I guess.
They also pick up a former nun called Sophia because reasons.
Because reasons, we need
Yes.
a. Essentially, it feels like we need to have a female character in this show
Yeah.
somewhere. So, what better thing to have? What better character to have than a former nun who just kind of loses it against a whole bunch of goons beside her at the same time? And decides, you know what? I'm going to join you guys. That's going to be a great option. And that's exactly what happens. So,
Makes perfect sense, I'm sure. I mean, it's not something you could go into looking for a lot of logic or understanding. It's one of these things I could see there being a bit of nostalgia for it in the continental countries where it did show, but that's the thing that puzzles me slightly about getting an English language release now, is I don't think there'd be the same level of nostalgia for it here, even though it does actually say here that it was dubbed by Saban in the 1990s, although I don't know whether
Oh,
maybe.
really?
Yes, I don't know whether maybe they never managed to sell it or something.
Maybe. Doesn't sound too surprising, actually. When I was looking at it, there was something about one of the characters I saw. I think it was called Mia the Cat.
Oh,
I'm sure I've seen that cat from somewhere else before, and I cannot point out
yes.
exactly where from, but I recognized the cat immediately, and I was like, I know this thing. I know this feline. I've seen it
I know
before
this cat.
somewhere. It looks like every other atypical feline ever shown in a 1980 show, but I'm sure I've seen it somewhere before.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. There's maybe something a little bit of the Cheshire Cat and Alice in
There
Wonderland about
is.
it, yeah.
Yeah, there is. And I think that's probably where it w maybe where I almost thought it was the Cheshire Cat in some way, so I was just waiting for him to disappear into the background at one point. But
But
it would actually make sense to where he disappeared to for most of the first episode, because he just suddenly disappears out of the blue, and then he reappeared again with the main character again in episode 2, and you're like, how did that happen? Where did you go? Where were you hiding?
do you think maybe that the twist that all this is building up to is in fact that it's the cat that has psychic powers and not Ryo?
You know, I did think that. I actually thought that, and it was kind of crazy. But when they were at this point in the second episode, where he was being forced by Nacrine to access a vault, when the cat went up to the wall, I honestly thought the cat was the one looking through the wall and could tell them. And I was like,
Yes.
"But you can't speak, so obviously they're not ever going to know this."
It's the effect is somewhat lost when the cat can't actually speak human language, yeah.
Yeah, but I did get that kind of vibe from the cat, to be honest, so it's kind of fun with that one.
Mean, but the only other thing that particularly struck me about this one was the opening theme tune, which for some reason contains the baffling English phrase "Take a ride on the midnight submarine," which I don't know, sounds like some kind of euphemism for drugs from the 1970s. I mean, you can kind of picture Gene Hackman and the French Connection busting someone for having a kilo of midnight submarine on them. But
To be honest, with the way that the opening is, when it's just them, just like the outline of the characters going in and out, you almost get the feeling that it is some kind of drug-induced delusion or hallucination you're getting from it. So
there is
it
something quite
wouldn't be.
psychedelic about
Yeah, so you almost get the feel that's what maybe it could allude to.
that, yeah. It's definitely an interesting one as a object of its time. You know, again, I'm unsure how people coming into it for the first time now are going to get on with this one.
Yeah, I think this one would be a bit all easier to watch than everything
Yeah,
else in my opinion. That's not really hard, to be honest.
I guess we've probably said everything we can cover for Rashomon, so should we move on to the other man that we wish to discuss, a Gatchaman?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm still uncertain about what a Gatchaman is, to be perfectly honest.
if you were to tell me Gatchaman now, without thinking Gatchaman crowd, you immediately think of a man who plays all these gacha games on their phone and just does all the draws. So to me, Gatchaman, if I had was never known of this beforehand, Gatchaman to me is someone who's got a million phones and their superpower is to getting 5 stars in every single draw they do, or getting the ultra
Would
rare cards.
definitely
Who knows? Maybe that's a show on the horizon. If it
watch.
is, please let me know. I am now going to trade for that.
Winter 2017, JC Staff, 26 episodes.
Exactly, we know exactly what kind of game that's going to be if it's coming from JC staff, so we know what's going to happen.
God. But
Yep.
Gatchaman is very much the kind of archetypal superhero team anime series of the 1970s, I guess. The ninja science team, kind of an anti-terrorist squad of bird suit themed young people who come to the rescue against an international terrorist group known as Galactor. Again, this was the first time I'd ever seen Gatchaman. It's something that I've heard a lot of people talking about before. I think I've seen a couple of the characters in that Capcom vs. Tatsunoko game when that came out. I really didn't know what to expect from this one, but I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, whenever I think of series that were animated in the early 1970s, I always think of something a bit like Charge Man Ken, where it's basically a slideshow. But I think that's doing that era a massive disservice. There's some actually quite nice stuff going on with this.
There was, yeah. The animation for this is actually really nice. I wasn't sure what to expect. I was expecting something a bit less, I think, when I was going into this one. I
It's
feel
obviously
like,
of its time, but you know, even within that.
yeah, I mean, I was going to say it very much kind of. I'm guessing Gatchaman was the first show which really captured the whole idea of, I guess what we call Japan call now Super Sentai. Yeah, I think this is maybe what I'm guessing is one of the ones that started the whole genre of the transforming heroes. In some ways as well, I don't know if you got this vibe from it, but when I was watching the first couple of episodes, I got this feeling of, I almost want to say Thunderbirds.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that exact same thing, actually. Yeah, I think there's a definite influence of Thunderbirds on it, just in the kind of the look of the vehicles and the way that they're being used. One vehicle goes inside the other one, and very much a bit like seeing something going into Thunderbird 2, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. It's just that it's been named like it's Gatchaman 1 or like the like G1, G2, G3, G4 to 5, and it just felt exactly like that. But then obviously the twist with this one is that when they all come together, they become this kind of phoenix whenever they use their
Yeah,
power at the
that was quite an unexpected one, that,
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, when I first saw it, I wasn't expecting that kind of level of
it's a bit more
power or like
yeah,
through
it's a bit more
science.
fantastical than you would expect, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting. I mean, I don't know what I should have been expecting when I saw a giant turtle flying in the sky, but you
Yes.
know, I think at the same time, there was when I first thought of Gatchaman. Whenever I've seen the iterations of the characters before, they've always been very much kind of human, just with gadgets. But in actual fact, there is a bit more of a fantastical vibe to them. They transform into their costumes as well, so there's clearly some kind of level of mysticism or science power to behind
So apparently this is ninja science, which is
it.
surely the best kind of science.
Although that makes more sense than that. I don't need to say about mysticism. It makes sense when I'm saying mysticism then, because it's all
Yeah,
ninja
no,
arts and all
that's
that.
actually, yeah, that's.
You get the impression with the way some of the characters interact as well that they don't really want to fight, but they just end up doing it anyways. And I think that's probably like, we don't want to do it, but we'll do it anyways, so we're making the viewers get some kind of eye candy at the same time. But actual fact, we just want to do some scouting. Which, of course, if that was the only thing they were doing, Gatchaman would be a complete different show.
As you're kind of getting, I like the dynamic between Ken and Joe, two of the main members of the Gatchaman team in the first episode, and that, good to say that Ken is the older, slightly older looking guy, and Joe is the younger one, or am I getting it the wrong way around?
The other one, other way around.
Is it
So the
the other way
main
around?
character is the other one is Ken, the main one is Ken, and then the guy that was kind of had a bit of a short fuse and was just wanting to go punch something was Joe.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that
So
was kind of an interesting dynamic that, Joe's very much egging him on to kind of go and get involved in the fighting, whereas Ken is wanting to kind of keep out of it a bit more and just observe and see what's going to happen.
yeah, it's quite a contrast. But there's still a bit of like a spark between them all. They're not always agreeing with everything they're doing,
Yeah.
essentially, which is kind of nice
It is a change from
because
something like Thunderbirds, where it is all very harmonious. They're all kind of thinking as one in a way.
and then you've got the rest of the cast. One's always wanting to prove their worth. One's always just infatuated with the main character, and the other one who just seems to be a bit more a cam giant, almost, I want to say. So it very much, when I think about it that way, I was originally going to say that you can feel it takes a lot from, I want to say, British and American TV at the time, and it feels like it's their first kind of take on something like this. Because there was something with the voice acting as well, which felt like it was like the first time they've really kind of entered this domain themselves. I don't know if you got that feeling as well, just with the way some of the dialogue was delivered.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, it's I think it was mainly the kind of visual aspect of it I felt a bit hung up on in this, and I maybe didn't notice it as much, but no, I see what you're getting at, yeah. But it
Because
does feel like they're maybe breaking new ground a bit here, and they're not just quite sure how to push forward with it. But
yeah, I think that it was most evident, not so much with the other three characters there, but I think most predominantly it was shown through Ken and Joe's interaction, because the delivery between them, yeah, it made sense. It felt like the voice actors didn't know how to approach it because they'd never done something like this before, or it's just something so it's still quite fresh that they're still kind of finding ways to deliver according to they do. And I imagine as you get to about 50 episodes into this show, you'll notice that they start to really understand their roles. But I think until then, it almost feels like it's a something brand new, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, again, this was a very long-running series, so I mean, I think it's you can't expect them to have it all nailed down straight from the off, but
This one was about 105 episodes, so you're looking to be just as long an investment as Galactic Heroes. But I think, again, like Urashiman, Gatchaman has this feeling that it's quite easy to watch. You could sit down and watch a few episodes at a time, whereas compared to Galactic Heroes, you really can't do that. You've really got to sit down, maybe watch a couple of episodes, then
absolutely.
take it in.
I mean, I think as well, if you wanted a kind of introduction to 1970s anime, this might not be a bad place to start. I mean, it's certainly
Definitely, yeah.
one of the more accessible ones that's been released in the UK. I mean, I don't think Discotheque have certainly released a few 70s series in the US, but I think in the UK this is maybe about the only one that's officially available, possibly.
I think so, actually, now you say that. I'm just trying to think if anything else was without being dubbed or kind of cut over.
I mean,
Because
obviously this was huge when it was released as Battle of the Planets, but I never actually saw that version of it. I mean, I guess it was probably repeated on TV a lot, probably, I don't know if it ever cropped up on like satellite TV or anything, because I do remember like briefly seeing a little bit of the later TV edit, which was called Eagle Riders, but it was never something I saw much of. I don't think that one lasted as long as Battle of the Planets did.
I didn't know. From what I remember of Battle of the Planets, because that's the only one that we really got, wasn't that a kind of mishmash of more than just Gatchaman
It
as well? Was it
may
not like
have
a
been.
combination of different series or something
Could
like
have
that?
been, possibly. I don't know Robotech was like that, but I don't know whether Battle of the Planets
Yeah.
was or not. Could be.
Yeah, I
Could
definitely
be.
know that Robotech did that, but I'm not sure of anything else. I was just curious to see how they approached it, because I'm sure this one did include something else on there.
I mean,
And
again, the Battle of the Planets version of this is also up on High Dive, so yeah, it is
it
there if
is,
anyone wishes to take the plunge.
yeah.
Oh
So
god,
if you really
I
want
made a diving pun without even realizing it.
to, oh, that's perfect. It's fine. So we
But
should be fine. I don't actually have one, because I thought of tried to think of any, but I just don't know if I have any at the moment. So we're safe for
probably
now.
for the best. I think this is definitely something that's worth checking out if you've never seen the 1970s series. I mean, it's such an iconic thing, it's worth just having a look at it for the, so you can say you've seen it.
So I imagine the way the Battle of the Planets one worked is much to how RTB was at the time. They cut out all gore and violence if there was any at all, and they said, "Here we go. Here's a nice, fairly safe one for the kids to watch." Whereas the original one was more to what I guess Japanese kids got, which was more, they didn't really mind too much if there's a bit of violence and blood and gore here and there, because it was fairly, you know.
It didn't strike me as particularly gory or anything, but it did surprise me when there was a scene in the first episode where some of the villain goons get thrown out of the open door of the bottom of the flying ship. So it's like, they're you're not going to see their parachutes, put it that way.
No, you're not. I mean, I guess you also in the same thing as that as well, that I think it was June's yo-yo she uses, that went into the side of someone's neck as well, so you just
Oh
kind of see
yeah,
it go on the side of the
that's
neck.
quite true,
So, and then the weapons themselves don't exactly look that safe, so I don't know how they would have changed them, but I mean, clearly that whenever Ken was throwing his talk boomerang at people, it was clearly designed to cut very deeply. So you're thinking, okay. I mean, this is different.
Again, all we need now is a character with nunchucks.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't too much more than that. I mean, obviously everything was exploding, so you could expect people were dying on explosions, but you never really get that in enable series. It's not really something you see anyways that much, so that was fairly typical. But everything else was a bit more than I expected, but again, it's the 70s, so
I think you can probably
that is
best sum this up by saying that they have villain uniforms with flares.
fine. Can't beat those flares, you know. If you, I mean, that you always kind of think 70s is flares.
It's because, I've got to go to my day job as an evil villain's masked goon, but at the same time, I might want to go to the disco later.
They probably did one at the same time. Who knows? Maybe they. Actual headquarters, the HQ of the main bad guys, was actually a disco, so you never know
Yes.
these days anymore.
Actually, I suppose it's worth mentioning as well that the way a lot of people will know Gatchaman now is through Gatchaman crowds.
Yeah, you'll know it's I think that takes from a similar idea as the five hero kind of thing, but in comparison to how it was originally done, it's a completely different kettle of fish. Gatchaman, the original series, feels more to what Thunderbirds was and Super Sentai is. So I would imagine stuff like Power Rangers and that wouldn't exist to the same extent they do now in the US and UK without Gatchaman and what that brought. If you're really interested in finding out where everything started from, I imagine there might be some other series here and there that also help define it, but I think if you
Oh,
want one of
yeah.
the shows that defined it to begin with, give Gatchaman a watch, and I think you'll be quite happy with what you get.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can definitely see the influence of the series. I think we've pretty much covered everything, so I guess at that point it only remains to say that we thank you all for listening and getting this far. Hopefully we'll be back again soon, but until then you can feel free to leave us a comment on the Anime UK News forums or give us a tweet to @NakamaB_podcast. That's NakamaB_podcast. So feel free to let us know what you think of any of the shows discussed, anything else you've seen on High Dive, or indeed any problems that you've had with High Dive's service. We would be very interested to know.
Would be, and if you have any other suggestions for us in the future as well, if you want anything else you want to discuss, maybe anything more on High Dive or any other retro shows, if you want more retro, then just let us know.
Indeed, please do.